It's a pleasure being back here after being gone to Colorado, spending some time with family. I had the opportunity to preach at the little congregation down there, do some counseling, and it's just been great. It's even greater being back because it's not 20 below here, and but it's enjoyable being there, and it's different because the cold is different there. Seriously, when you say it, it sounds funny, but you get there 20 below, it's pretty chilly. And when it warms up to zero, it feels hot. So just the differences. What I'd like to talk about this morning is having the best marriage. And you might think about for yourself, if somebody says, what kind of marriage do you have? I say, oh, it's the best marriage. Well, what they do sometimes is they do surveys. And in a recent survey, they asked people that had been married 10 years or more, have you been happily married? And to that response, 28% said yes. 21% said no. 41% said, well, it depends on which day you ask me. And maybe that's kind of reasonable because we go through those different ups and downs of life. Then they had another question. Is your marriage in a rut? And to that, a startling 71% of the people said yes. But as Christians, we don't want marriages that, we want them that stay the distance, but we don't want them that just stay the distance. We want to enjoy the journey and give God the glory in the process. Nobody likes a week-old cup of coffee. Nobody wants a marriage or a religion where you just go through the emotions. What you want is that you have all the best of what God has for you. And so this morning, there's a lesson I want to share with you of the formula that works. And what it is BEST. It's a little acronym. And that is for blessings, encouragement, sharing, and touch. Now you might say, well, Paul, I might as well go home now because I'm not married or whatever your situation is. But the reality is this little formula works in all kinds of relationships. It's going to work in marriage relationships. It'll work in building and maintaining friendships. It'll work in raising your kids, how you raise your kids. It works in doctors and nurses in the medical field. It works in with teachers to students in the academic field. It works Christian to Christian in the spiritual realm. So wherever you are, if you got your little pencil out and blank page in your back of your Bible, one preacher said, I got 100 blank pages in the back of my Bible. Most don't have that many, but maybe you've got a notebook or maybe there's a little spot on the handout flyer that you can make some notes on. And so if you say, well, I would like better relationships. I would like the kind of relationships that God has designed for me to have. The first, I would say, for the B in the best kind of marriage or relationships is for blessings. That really comes from a compound Greek word, eu, like we say for eulogy, and logio, to speak. That is to speak well of, and whether you look at vines or thayers or such as that, the sense repeatedly is to praise, to speak positively of someone. You ever come across somebody that talks about their mate? Oh, Harold or old Gladys. And it's really, really negative. Or parents really talk down about kids. And kids say, parents talk down about us? Yeah, well, kids, let me ask you. You ever talk down about your parents? Oh, my parents never let me do anything. They are so mean, whatever the situation is. But what 1 Peter 3 and verse 9 says is not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. You've come across people that says, well, I don't get mad, I just get even. You ever thought about how unscriptural that is? That's exactly what God says do not do. But isn't that what happens in relationships and friendships and marriages? One person gets mad and they raise their voice and the other one matches that. One says mean things, and I can top that. And you become a chainsaw. Some people feel like it's all right. That's the way I was raised, or they started it. But I want to share something startling with you, for some people anyhow. It's not all right to yell. In Ephesians chapter 4 and down in verse 31, he talks about a number of qualities as Christians he wants us to build inside ourselves. And he says, put aside all wrath and clamor. That is, man, I hate them, and if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to get even. And clamor is that word for yelling. Christians, think about your home. Does your home, I'm not talking when you're at a football game, yay, go Seahawks or whatever like that. I mean just yelling at each other. Parents at the kids at the parents, spouses at each other. That is not scriptural any more than the use of profanity is. In Ephesians chapter 4 and down verse 29, there's where the Apostle Paul said, let no unwholesome speech proceed out of your mouth. I remember when I was a brand new Christian, Cleveland, Ohio, and the preacher talked about some Christian swear. Well, totally startled me. Now, in my house, we swore. I swore before I was a Christian. Everybody around me swore, but I thought somehow when you become a Christian, shazam, that words, bad words never happen. Well, that's not totally, that should be totally true, but that's not always so. Because it takes a while to get past our past, right? And I'd tell people, even when I made the decision, I'm not saying that stuff anymore, wham, something would jump up, and it's like the reader board. Hello, welcome to Albertsons. The temperature today is 49 degrees or whatever like this. I could visualize the words, but I told myself, I am not going to say those things anymore. So think about when you're in conflict with somebody, what kind of speech do you use? In 1 Corinthians 4 and in verse 12, Paul said, being reviled, we bless. Now, as I think about that, rather than excusing it, well, they started it, or they made me angry. One person was a really neat book I came across, I don't know how many years ago, and it talked about how nobody can make you angry. And he said, if that sounds totally preposterous, just listen for a minute. They can make you dead, right? They can shoot you with a gun, but they can't make you angry. You may get angry over what they said or the interpretation that you put on something, but they can't make you that way. And so as we think about that, we can't find justification. Well, that's the way I was raised, or I can't help it. I grew up in a family of yelling, and I personally did, but I made the decision that stops with me. I don't want it to be part of our culture. I don't want it to be spiritually and domestically. And a scripture I shared with an attorney in the Virgin Islands yesterday is Colossians 4 and in verse 6. Let your speech be always with grace. Can I say it more kindly than really the situation might even deserve? And Proverbs 12, 18, there's one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword. You can remember, everybody can remember things when somebody said something to you that not only hurt then, when you draw it to mind now, it still hurts. It irritates you. And let's not be that kind of a person. So when you think about talking to individuals, do you tell them, I've been praying for you? I came across a situation here just within the last couple of months where Mickey Bonner had been trying to help some people that were not members of the congregation, and when he confronted them on some things that would be appropriate for them to do, the guy got angry and swore at Mickey. And Mickey said, well, God bless you. Isn't that the right thing to say? It's unusual. And one person said, well, what I'd say to them is, coming from you, that's a compliment. Meaning, usually it's so much worse from you. But really, that's an insult as well. It is so unlike us to say, you seem to be angry. you seem to have several problems, and I'm sorry that you're upset. Can I bless them?" That's what John did for Gaius in 1 John 3, down about verse 2, where it says, "I pray that you may prosper and be in good health, as your spirit prospers." And so think about really telling people, "I've been praying for you. I see your growth. I'm so impressed by the steps you've taken. You're doing a great job. And I'm just blessed to be your friend," or parent to child, or spouse to spouse. And when I say that, I mean you're doing it sincerely. Your flattery is an insincere compliment. But you look them in the eye, you smile, and say, "I'm so glad you're my friend. I'm really blessed by that relationship." Think about how neat that works in marriages, rather than haranguing and negativity and things along that line. Well, the next thing in the realm of having the best kind of marriage or relationship is the E, and that is for encourage. Parakaleo, to call to your side, and that is to in order to give them comfort. There's a number of times the Bible talks about that sort of thing. In Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 8, Paul said to the Colossians, "I sent Tychicus to encourage your hearts." People get discouraged sometimes. It can be in marriage, it can be in spirituality, and job, finances, health, whatever it is. You know, and sometimes somebody just shows up and says, you're doing great. I've been praying for you. I'm going to stick right with you. And we need that. Kids need that. Teenagers, young adults, seniors, people with reversals in life. Has there been times you said, "Man, I could have sure used somebody by my side"? 1 Thessalonians 5 and down in verse 11, Paul tells the Thessalonians, who are a good congregation, he said, "Encourage one another just as you are doing." And so rather than they're here and good, that one person said a healthy home should have 10 to 1 positive to negative comments. And I think about that and I wonder about in my own life. And I thought, I wonder if that's true in raising boys. And here's Travis, got pneumonia, he's not here. And Jeff might say, "You know, in raising little boys, that may not be the right ratio there. It may take a little more Board of Education applied to the posterior." But at any rate, our job is really to help the family round about us to feel as good as they possibly can in the right way. 1 Thessalonians 5:14, to encourage the faint-hearted. Sometimes people are just on the edge of giving up, just little winds about to blow them over. Titus chapter 2 and down in verse 4, for the older women to train the younger women, encourage them to love their husbands, love their children. That word love is phileo. It's different from the one we usually come across, is agape. And what happens sometimes is wives have had it. They are done, right? And they just, "Man, I can't handle it. My husband is so," and whatever their appropriate adjective is. And so older women can encourage younger women. Well, hang right in there. And I share this from time to time. And it's kind of humorous, but there may be some merit to it. Jeannie says in counseling, she takes women that have husbands that have caused them a lot of grief, said, "You need to understand something. Men are brain damaged." And so I thought, well, that may be, I don't know. I wonder if that's a reasonable excuse. Glenn, that's okay, I'm just brain damaged, and so don't worry about that. But the reality is probably we're more obtuse rather than observant. Women notice things so much more ardently than most men do, and the women in my family. We'll be going out for a walk, and Glenn will say, "Well, look over in that house. There's a panda bear or a teddy bear in the window." Well, I barely noticed that there was a house there, much less, I don't care what's in the window. I just don't look at those kind of things. Think about for your own self. What if you determine I am going to be my mate's, my family's, my friend's best cheerleader? You're familiar with the book of Ephesians, and in chapter 5, here's where Paul talks about Christ and the church, but he uses the analogy of the family relationship. And wives, be submissive to your own husbands as unto the Lord. And then husbands, for you to love your wives and cherish them as yourself. And the reason is that women want love and cherishing. Men want respect. Out on the football field, guys, do you want to be loved by the other team? No, I don't want to be loved by the other team. It'd be fine if they liked me a little, but I don't even care about that. What we want to do is we're going to hit them hard enough and effectively enough, we're going to gain their respect. And maybe they're not even going to want to challenge our part of the field. But if they do, and I'm not saying an illegal hit, but we're going to hit them with enthusiasm because that's part of the game. It's a violent game. And so men really want that, and they want that in the home. If they don't feel like the wife is giving that, or that they appreciate them, men lose heart. If women don't feel like they're getting the love and the cherishing, they lose heart. God knows exactly what we need. And so, well, husbands, how do you do that? Let's say your wife comes down into the living room, family room, or whatever, and she's wearing the dress, and she says, "How do I look?" It's not enough to say, "Yeah, okay." Right? That doesn't mean anything to them. That's not what they want to hear. They want to hear, "Wow, you look great in red." And they want to hear the specifics. Your eyes are beautiful. That thing of sometimes a mate will say, "I love you," and the wife will tell me why. And she doesn't want to hear one reason. She'd like to hear 6 or 16 or 136. She wants to know, are you serious about that? So men, if you're serious about it, it isn't, yeah, you look fine. She wants to know that, wow, you look terrific. Men hunger for appreciation. They hunger for respect. And so I'll note sometimes I read in Facebook and wives will just post that my husband is awesome. And then they will say maybe some comments why that is. So think about that. Rather than sometimes husband will belittle wives or vice versa because they think they're going to get control by doing that. But what happens is you belittle yourself. Because if you've been around people that do that, here's Gladys, "Oh, my husband, you know, Geraldo, man, 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 man." Well, you don't feel much better about Geraldo, and you feel real bad about, if in this case the name I made up, Gladys, is saying those kind of things. That what our whole spirit ought to be that of encouraging. And that's what we try to do as a family in Christ here. If you're here, we want to get to know you. We want to encourage you. We want to be a blessing to you. We're just delighted that you're here this morning. Now think about the relationships that you establish with others. Would you say, as you treat people, you try to bless them, be a blessing to them, you pray for them? The reason I had the occasion to talk to the Virgin Island attorney, I've got a disabled brother, he's over in Covington, and older in assisted living, and when I first got to know this gal, I could tell she is very, very competent. She's going after the social services who dropped the ball in his care when he lived down there. And what she said in a little text we sent back and forth, she said, "Paul, I've been praying for you, not that you need it." And I said, "Well, I want to tell you, we all can use all the help that we get." And I just appreciate that. And she has had some severe health reversals. And she said, "I'm assuming you've been praying for me too." And so you bless individuals, you encourage them, you tell them how good that they are doing. And then the S part of this is sharing. Philippians chapter 2 and down in verse 18, Paul talks to this, one of the most faithful congregations in the New Testament, and he says, share your joy with me. There's things that you do that are fun, but aren't they a lot more fun with somebody else? I don't care what the thing is. If I like watching football game, and here a little handful of time, me and Vernon Wood will get together and we'll watch the Seahawks. I cheer enthusiastically for the Seahawks. Now, Vernon's a little more quiet about the Seahawks, and the reason is that's not his favorite team. Now, he may have been cheering yesterday when Kansas City won, and because that's one of his favorite teams. And so I get excited, but I don't get nearly excited as Travis and Cody Dillinger get. They get really excited. I told you before that they have a big screen TV downstairs, and after a while, just the decibel level gets so great. I come upstairs with Jeff and Kim where it's a little quieter and my ears stop ringing. But I'd like to be with people in happy times. You share good things. But as well, in Philippians 4 and in verse 3, he talked about these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of Christ. And when people have the same goals as you, doesn't that mean more? So think about in a family. Think about in a husband-wife relationship. Everything shouldn't be just responsibility and drudgery. It should be fun. And one person said that troubles shared are halved. And joy shared is doubled. And so is that the kind of person you are? Think about that aspect of you share your joy. And in our family, I like to tell jokes. I like to say funny things. Glenda has a whole array of funny faces she makes at me, and they're just super. And we do that kind of as a family and as an extended family. I just like to, I don't have these memorized jokes, you know. All right, once upon a time, here is this horse and blah, blah. I don't memorize those kind of things. It's just kind of funny, spur of the moment things that occur to me. And yet, having individuals that you trust and love and you know they're on the same journey as you are, wow, what a great opportunity to share those experiences. In Philippians 4 and down in verse 15, he said to the Philippian congregation, that none other but you shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving. Finances, that aspect of sharing when people are in a tough spot and you're willing to do what you can to help them. And in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and in verse 3, Paul talks about foods which God has prepared to be gratefully shared in by those that believe and know the truth. Some families don't even much eat together. Maybe that's more so now. Here the kids got their little iPad and they're off in their room and the parents are doing their thing. And sometimes husband and wife are both studying the Bible, but they're studying in different parts of the house. And it has gotten to be so in America, just kind of broad. Basically, people don't hardly eat together anymore. And so think about that. What if you said, you know, we're going to spend more together time? Ben Cotenball was telling me a little while back that he was at some congregation, I guess in the Midwest. You're traveling and you visit there. And he stopped into this congregation, and people hardly talked to him. And after it was over, nobody invited him out anywhere. And so they went to a little neighborhood restaurant, and they found a number of the members of the congregation were there. But the members of the congregation that were there weren't even talking to each other, and when they showed up, they weren't talking to them either. I thought, my goodness. What is going on there? Like this afternoon, we'll get together at that little community center at the Knapps and Garrett's, and we'll have a going away party for the Notabooms, and we just want to be with you. Why? We want to share together. Actually, we don't want them to go at all. So we've been thinking about, can we cement them here? But yeah, it is what it is. Some people are coming. Some people have to move in different parts. And we want to be a blessing in that they can take the encouragement they get here and share it with people in other areas. Think about how you share with your family, how you share with your mate. You share your fears, your dreams, your hopes, and the secrets that you wouldn't generally share with the public. There is an intimacy and an importance there. Some people feel like, yeah, well, we don't do anything together. Well, that's unfortunate because you could, you should, and you ought to. One kind of poet philosopher said, marriage is like the strings of a guitar vibrating to the same song. I liked that. I like guitar music. And in another part of their poem, he said, but let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between. And that is, we don't do everything the same. We do a lot of the same things. Sometimes when we're watching movies, we like some of the same movies. We've come to appreciate some of the other person's movies. From the 60s, I like Star Trek. And then you have the different permutations of it, and Star Trek, the Next Generation, has been going on in serial form now, and British Broadcasting Company, and this and that. And so we'll watch some of that together. And I have a greater interest in lions eating zebras than Glenda does, and things swallowing other things, but she'll watch some of that. But she has a greater interest in kind of these Victorian age dramas, you know, what we call the puffy sleeve movies. I'll watch a little of that, but I'd probably rather watch football. And so, but you do different things. Or if you exercise, she doesn't do the kind of exercise I do, but I can do some of the things that she wants. And so if you're thinking about, what could I do to improve the quality of our marriage? Well, maybe we could be a blessing to each other. Maybe we could be more encouraging to each other. Maybe we could be more sharing with each other. Think about this. If there were a triangle, and I just called it the holy triumvirate. If God is at the top and the husband and wife are at the base, the closer we get to God from this triangle, then the closer we get to each other. And so think about that. Maybe that spiritual aspect of your life has been depleted, and what you need to do is build it up, get it fired up, get it warmed up, get it charged up, get it rolling in the right direction. And the triangle gets smaller and more intimate the closer you get to God. You think about this? Your spouse is second only to God. You're forming that close relationship that can be inclusive of children, extended family, other Christians. But we need to realize God's at the top of the triangle. And so build, encourage, fire up, stoke the embers of that marital relationship. And then the last thing I'd like us to talk about is this fourth part, in just a moment, the touching. Because what happens is people don't maintain their marital bridges and they collapse. And this one here is Skagit River, May 23rd, 2013. And the reality is it can be rebuilt. Skagit River Bridge, and here's the newer section between the pylons, was rebuilt in about 6 months by September 15th of that same year. So rather than say, well, it's over. I mean, it just doesn't work. We don't love each other anymore. We're thinking about hanging it up. Virtually anything can be rebuilt if you want to do it badly enough. Well, what about the touch in marriage? And I thought about this, and I just called it the power of meaningful touch. And probably we don't think about it this way. We think about it in the affectionate aspect. But touch lowers your blood pressure, which is good. It strengthens your immune system, and it gives you the ability, it enhances your ability to fight off disease. It's a natural tranquilizer. It's comforting. Mammals generally like touch. Dogs like it. Cats like it somewhat. I was impressed. Joy did some work. She started out in rehab therapy for humans, and she did different kinds of massage, and one of them was for horses. I never thought about horses wanting to be touched. You just ride them, and they eat oats and run around in the field and create problems for you. And she said, oh, Dad, watch. And of course, the people that are a little more wealthy have their horses massages. You know, regular cowboys, hey, you know, get the bridle. And so I went out with her one day, and so here's this horse. And I'm watching the horse. I'm watching the eyes. Are they rolling? Are the ears starting to go back? And so this horse is just a little alert. And she goes in and starts rubbing just on the forward shoulder on it. And she told me what to watch for. Pretty soon the horse's head is coming down, down, down. It starts drooling and that kind of thing. That horse is, I never thought about a horse wanting massage. I mean, they're a massive animal, but the reality is it's calming by that touch. It increases closeness. It increases one's lifespan. It increases your energy level. It makes us more positive about life. As we're going through the airports, we were impressed by, here's these little massage salons, 15 minutes for $15 or something, and people are at this one place where, man, there's a lot of people in there. Why? It's going through the airport is a stressful thing. You got to get through TSA, and then they're stopping you and checking you for gunpowder, and all this thing went off in your bag, and all right, stretch out. Now they're giving you a very complete pat down. And so it's stressful. And is the plane going to get there on time, and can you get through TSA, and blah, 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 all that stuff. And so just being touched. Now think about people in different situations. We just appreciate touch. Now some people grew up in a home where we don't touch, we don't even shake hands. And but how important the meaningful touch is. In Matthew 19, verse 13, little children came to Jesus and he laid hands on them and blessed them. Little kids will come running up to me, granddaughters or whatnot, and I just appreciate they give me a little hug, and I just kind of lean over and I kiss them on the top of the head. I'm just telling, hey, I'm so glad you're here. It's just a delight. And then they go off chattering and play with their friends or do whatever. If it's to Christians, I want to look in their eyes. I want to smile. I want to tell them, I'm so glad you're here. Jesus, to the fearful, here were the disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration, and Jesus was transfigured before them in Matthew chapter 17, and down in verse 7, Jesus touched them and said, be not afraid. Just somebody, rather than being isolated in this digital age, somebody just touching you and saying, I'm so glad you're here. You are so welcome. You're part of this family. Jesus did that with the blind men in Matthew 29:9. Luke 15 down in verse 20, here was the prodigal son, and the prodigal son had run off and made a mess out of his life, and the father didn't say, here, Guido, man, you are a mess, and you're going to have to pay your dues before you. Dad didn't do that. He saw him afar off and ran to him and embraced him and kissed him repeatedly. That aspect, and people have different comfort levels of how much affection they want, and you'll get the sense of that, or you can ask them, would you like a hug? And here in Acts 20 and down in verse 37, as Paul is departing from friends, they embraced him and they wept. And it grieves us when friends leave. We rejoice when they come back. And the sweethearts in Song of Solomon in chapter 2 and down in verse 6, you know, may He put his hand beneath me and embraced me. Because that touch really does increase closeness. It really says, I care, and I know the person behind the eyes, and I like them. I have confidence in you, and you're going to do great. So think about it. You know, sometimes when they're sweethearts, men are sitting right, I mean, they're glued together, hip and shoulder, and they're holding hands, and if they're in a little soda fountain place and sharing a malt, and they're gazing into each other's eyes, after a few years, man, they're on the opposite sides of the car and not talking and irritated with each other. Think about generating and displaying that closeness, sitting close together. Sometimes it's with kids, you know, you get kid and the first one, you got one kid between you on your lap, and then you got six of them, and you're at the other end of the pew. Oh, but that love kind of flows in between, and sometimes it's best. You need one kid on one side and one on the other, and that's so. But you're sharing and showing that person, I love you. What about holding hands with your mate when you go on a walk? Holding hands when you're in the car. It's driving around, stressful, all the nuttiness out there. Just snuggling. And our family is fairly huggy. And I've mentioned to people this past week, grandkids are, daughters are. I got a youngest grandson that is the huggiest creature I've ever seen. I mean, he is all boy. You get him on a snowmobile, I mean, it is wide open. Granddaughter says, put, 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 we're being responsible here. This little six-year-old boy is all boy, but he's the huggiest creature I've ever come across. And so we get over there to Colorado, and all the kids are sick, and one's tossing their cookies, and the other one's runny nose. Says, oh, go blow your nose. Well, what's the little grandson? Grandpa. Let's snuggle. Give me a horseback ride. Let's wrestle. And you want to say, look, you're a 40-pound cold germ. Get out of here. But they were more important than that. And so sometimes I don't go around people because I want to bless them, and I don't want them to have what I have. Because there's different types of meaningful touch. We're just talking about the kind that lets the other person know you're important. And I care about you. And you've noticed there's different hugs that guys give guys than gals give gals, right? Here's the man hug. You're shaking the right hand, and then it comes up between you and the other guy, and you may pat him on the shoulder, but you don't want to be all that close, right? You like him. You want to show him, hey, me and you, but I'm not asking you for a date, and I want you to understand that. There's a kind of meaningful touch where sometimes with the kids, I'll just say, high five. I want them to know, I see you, and I'm so glad you're here. It's great to be your friend. There is the kind of touch when, here's the boy to the girl. They're sitting side by side, and he has the forefinger just on her elbow. Now, if you're sitting in a football game, you want some guy's hand on your elbow? Not unless he says, hey, man, I'm going for some hot dogs. You want a few? You say, yeah, give me two. But generally, we don't want that kind of closeness from another guy. But a guy to a gal is just saying to a sweetheart, hey, honey, I know you're there. But then there are hugs. You ever have a hug that makes you uncomfortable? It's too close. And I thought about this hug from a tiger. As its paws wrapped around the guy's leg, I saw other ones where this 9-foot-tall tiger is leaning over the guy. I don't want to be overpowered by the hug. I'm just saying hello. And so think about in your relationships. It can be friend to friend, child to parent, vice versa, spouse to spouse. How do you do that? You want to give a blessing. You want to be a blessing to that person. You want to encourage them. You want to share the parts of their life that's important. And meaningful and appropriate touch. And I thought about ending it this way. Have you been touched by the Master's hand? He came really to seek and save the lost. He came to touch every one of us. He came to call the lost to himself. And I was as lost as I could be as an 18-year-old. And you've all heard that story about here's this violin showed up in a auction, and they tried to sell it off, and nobody was interested. It was old and dusty and didn't look very good. And so the auctioneers, who will bid for this old violin? $1, $2, $2, $5. And nobody was interested until the master came forward and took the violin and played so beautifully. Tears came to people's eyes. And he said, who will offer $500, $1,000, $5,000 for this old violin who had the touch of the master's hand? And that's where we are, aren't we? We all need that. If you're here this morning, you say, I'm ready to be baptized into Christ. With all my heart, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. I'm certainly willing to repent of my sins. I want to confess his name not only before this audience, but before the world. And I have my sins that I need forgiven, and I want to be washed clean. I want the touch of the master's hand. If you're here this morning, we can help you in that way. Or if you'd like us to pray for you, won't you come forward and let us know as we stand and sing our final song.